Hey, yo, what is a cypher?
The Coca-Cola or Pepsi of rap.
The knowledge of the cypher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cypher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cypher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cypher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotaro. This is episode 150, a talk with Fat Joe and Remy Ma. Joe and Remy are longtime friends and collaborators who have been making music together since the heyday of their crew, The Terror Squad, in the early 2000s. For more about their respective bios, check the show notes for this episode at thecyphershow.com. Here's what you really need to know about this episode. We talk about Joe from his early life writing and slinging crack, go through his first shows at the Apollo, and take him all the way to his days now as a dance dad. Along the way, however, we get both of their perspectives on jail and PTSD, a never-before-heard Fat Joe verse, their thoughts on the epic bridge wars, and their live reactions to finding out about the recent accusations against Afrika Bambaataa. We end on a lighter note, with Joe and Remy discussing and singing some of their favorite breaks and songs of the late 70s and 80s. We spoke to Joe and Remy at the offices of 5WPR in Midtown Manhattan. As a bonus, make sure to listen all the way through the credits for a special Don Will remix of that never-before-heard Fat Joe verse. Don, if you didn't hear him on episode 94, also did the track for Make Donald Drumpf Again for John Oliver. You don't want to miss this. The best way to make sure you hear each episode of The Cypher as soon as it drops is to subscribe on iTunes. Once you do that, you'll also be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, you can hear our interview with another South Bronx legend, the great KRS-One, on episode 56. But the best way to help the show is to become a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. If even some of our listeners contributed just $1 a month, it would go a long way towards making the show sustainable. If you're curious about any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what we're up to on the air and in the wider world. And now, here's two people always ready to lean back and do the Rockaway, Fat Joe and Remy Ma. So I guess, you know, I wanted to start out by talking about your upcoming record. There are lots of rap duos, past and present, you know, EPMD and Ghost and Ray and Outkast and all that kind of stuff. Did you consciously use any rap duos as a model for your project?
I didn't, you know what, this is like the first day I've even thought of it as a rap duo. Like, I heard it earlier when we did, you know, an interview. I haven't even thought of it like, yeah, me and Fat Joe, we're the rap duo. It's just like, did you think of it like that? Like, you know, Mob Deep
like
or
won,
something.
Like, you know what I'm saying? And I don't right. even think we're like a rap duo. Yo, that's weird that we say right? it because we are a rap duo.
right.
But I never thought of it like we
never thought of it like
duo.
A rap duo, even though we... Kind of like a rap duo now.
We right. feel like we won. She wants me to win. I want her to win. We become one on this. We don't technically.
If he wins, I win. If I win, he wins.
Yeah. Right. So far, you know, we've heard one song all the way up.
I'm that nigga on Viagra dick. That means I'm all the way up. And you can stay up. P.O. say I can't get high. Hop in the helicopter. Uber and said, go all the way.
What you need?
My Knicks run the game, we ain't never leave.
Never leave.
Counting up this money, we ain't never sleep.
Never sleep.
You got V12, I got 12 V's.
How representative is that of the full record?
Well, if there's anything representing the album, I guess we're going to get 5 stars.
I mean, I mean, how many people like would actually come and say, like, you know, All the Way Up is really great, but the rest of our album is trash. Like,
I guess you're not going to say that, obviously, right? Yeah.
First of all, like, I don't think anyone would say that, even if it was true. But unfortunately, that's not the case. Like, we definitely had a toss up. Like, Joe, of course, won, like he usually does, and everyone like in the whole squad and you know our immediate circle, you know, everyone picked different records that they thought should be the record that you guys put out that, you know, introduces y'all as Rem and Joe with this project to the world. And Joe was always from day one with All the Way Up, like, this is the one that we gotta go with first. So I say that to say that the album was so crazy that we really had numerous choices to pick from, and they all seemed like a good choice. Like, I almost had him one day. I remember one day, like, I almost had him. He called me, he's like, "Really, Rem, you think that one should be the record?" I was like, "Yes." And then I came back, I don't know who overrode me while I was gone, and then we got back to All the Way Up, but I had him like on the edge one day.
Nice.
Ain't you glad I was right? I mean, you know, I just, you know, everybody, you know, we put in hard work on this album, and we really honestly believe it's the best album coming out. And it's going to be really, really hard. Somebody's going to have to really dig real deep. You ever watch one of them boxing matches where it's like the 12th round and they're like huffing and puffing, but
barely standing,
barely standing, and who's going down, who gets it? Like, you got to do one of them shits to beat this album, because this album right here is a very serious album, man.
Okay.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. And
we'll,
so
we'll just go with that word.
Very, very serious question. Will, for this record, will we see the return of the cane and the top hat?
The cane and the top hat. Well, you know, I started that. We might. You might.
I want you credit. Might. I want points.
We're discussing something. Yeah, we actually, you get the top hat and the cane, but remember when I told you that video we shooting? There's the long
that
table with the...
Well, this was, I was thinking of the Apollo when you started out.
That is the original. How do you know that?
Kid Capri said that once in an interview, that when he met you.
Who sent you?
That is a fact.
Who are you, really? You know, that's the look he gave you. How do you know that?
No, he's absolutely right, because when he first said it, I said, no way this guy knows. Right. So I didn't think he meant that. Mm-hmm. I thought he just meant like Don Cartagena or something. But he's absolutely right. When I won the Apollo, I came out with the top hat and I came out with the cane. So I had a cane that flips open and they put, what's those stones? The diamonds, the fake diamonds, rhinestones all over them shit. So when I was walking down the stairs in the Apollo and I came out, I flipped the cane and the shit was all rhinestoned out. And I start rapping. Nah, that shit was a movie, my nigga. First place 4 weeks in a row. Niggas wasn't ready for it.
That was the thing that really launched your career, right? It was there to Red Alert to a record deal.
Red Alert, yep. Well, you know, there you go. My man, well, I never heard Ben ask that question before.
Right.
All right. Hey, yo, Ram, we caught that one.
5 minutes in, we got it. All right.
My man caught that one early.
So I want to ask just a little bit about the DITC days. Mostly, you were around for pretty much all of the making of Stunts, Blunts, and Hip Hop, right?
Yeah, I'm on every ad-lib on the album.
Right, every voice in the background. Or
fuck you, chill, yo, yeah. I'm the, yo, that's that shit.
Yo, could you turn it up?
Yo, that's that shit.
Hey, yo, fix the station.
Yo, that's that shit.
Yo, watch them fuck it up.
Yo, that's
you know what I'm saying? I'm the original human ad-lib machine on that album. And I take full credit.
Yeah. What do you remember?
Simon's birthday yesterday.
Oh, what do you remember about those sessions?
What do I remember? Come on, bro. It was like, first of all, I was trying to get on. Diamond D personally put me on. And, you know, I was just so honored to be there because he was on such a level. And that album is such a classic album that anything to do with that album, like, you know, one day Pharrell pulled me over and was like, "Yo, Joe, man, how did y'all make that album? That album was like, you know, it was like, it was the soundtrack to my life. This was the one." And I was just telling them stories. You know, back in them days, you know, there wasn't no Pro Tools. There wasn't no real punching in. There wasn't no, it was so crazy, man. And I just remember just being, you know, loving music so much. And I was just honored to support my brother, You know what I'm saying? During that album. That album's a classic. It's the best DITC album. Now, my favorite rapper in DITC, who I think is the best, is Lloyd Finesse. And, you know, but Diamond's album, Body of Work, hands down, is, I would put that up. Like, you know what I'm saying? If we got to battle another crew,
yeah,
what's your best album against ours? I would take that album and just put it up as the best work ever come out from DITC. It's crazy. I was with them last night, I didn't get to say that. You know, we did Tony Touch's radio show, and I wish I would have said what I told you now. It's better when you can say it in front of somebody's face.
Right. So you guys have a reunion thing coming out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And we went hard. You know what I'm saying? And I'm glad to still be able to make music with the guys I started with. You know, it's an honor to work with them, and everybody's still nice, and the beats are incredible, so I'm excited about it.
Yeah. And Remy, starting about the beginning of your rapping, kind of beginning of your career, I was listening to the record yesterday, too. There's Something About Remy, and there's that song Crazy, where you talk about how you were essentially living on your own by the time you were 15.
Some say I'm 730, and I am 730. Been smoking since I was 13, and on my own since I was half a 30. I thought I ain't have to worry, because I was always pretty. I find a dumb nigga getting dough and through his pockets dirty. But see that,
what was it like being, you know, essentially like without parents when you were so young?
That is my favorite song ever that I've ever done. That's so crazy. This guy's on the road with these questions that no one's asked us.
That's incredible.
You know, I think that it's hard for women, period. You're a female, just be prepared to, you know, go through things that, you know, a guy or the average, you know, person. To be a female and to be black, Spanish or minority, forget about it. Like, it's like a double whammy. Like, so, because, you know, you're fighting two different, you know, things. And I grew up in the era, I was born in the 80s, and I grew up in an era where literally, like, everyone's family was going through, you know, drug addiction. And, you know, and if it wasn't drug addiction, their parents was, you know, being incarcerated because they were the ones providing the drugs. And I ended up in a situation where I really didn't have a place to stay. Like, you know, my mom had a little bit of time for our house got raided and stuff. And my dad, I didn't know him at that time. And it was like, I didn't really have a family because I didn't know my father's side of family. My mom's side of family is really small. I really didn't have anywhere where I felt comfortable to go. And I pretty much was living from one friend house to the next friend house. But, you know, when you're 15, 14, 15, you know, you can't just go and stay in someone's house. One, I can't, you know, take care of myself. I wasn't even old enough to get a job. So it was definitely hard. And I feel like a lot, why that record is so special to me, because it, like, kind of embodies and put everything into, like, what I was going through. And not just me. It was me and people, my friends, my best friend who, you know, who is, you know, suffering from cancer right now. We were friends since we were 10 years old. She was homeless too. Like, her mom had passed away. She didn't have any family. Like, we would kind of, you know, help each other out. Everything that I learned from boys and sex and getting, you know, down to simple stuff like, you know, getting, you know, your period. Like, I didn't know. We learned from each other. No, I really, like, true story, like, I really, like, the first time I was like, oh my God, what's happening? Because I was sheltered. My mom kept me in the house. So when I was out there, it was like I was learning everything on my own. And when I was making that song, I thought about all the females that was going. It wasn't just me. It was a lot of females that was going through that, where they was, you know, out in the streets. They was out on their own. And they was doing things like marrying people to get them their immigration papers and getting money for it, you know, or selling drugs. Like, it was a lot of things that, you know, that I would never want, you know, my little sisters, or if I ever have a daughter, to have to do to make ends meet and to just to survive. So that's what that whole story was in there. And then I was able to meet somebody like Pun, who saw something in me that nobody else seen, and it was able to, like, you know, that changed my life. I really could have been somewhere totally different and had a totally I would have had a totally different life.
Yeah. You effectively dropped out of high school to hang out at his house, as I understand it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It was like, you know, I always knew I was really smart. I have a college degree now, but
yeah.
I always knew I was smart. And a lot of times I used to go to school, not because I just thought it was fun, because I could eat at school. I would go early in the morning. I'd eat breakfast in school. I'd eat lunch in school. And, you know, at least I know I was good to that part of the day. And it was like, when I had met Pun, it was like, I could either continue to go to school or I could, you know, be in a studio and I could go with this. And I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't know anybody who went to school and was successful and had money and was driving the cars that I seen Pun driving and wearing the jewelry and having the money that seems him doing. And it just seemed like the smart decision to me, which obviously it ended up being that decision.
Ended up working, yeah.
It's sad when we live in a world where they teach you, you know, stay in school and, you know, school is cool and you'll be this. And I definitely encouraged that. But growing up, I didn't know anybody who had made it to be anything from going to school. All the people that I knew that were successful was drug dealers. They was, you know, getting money. They was doing whatever they was doing. So that's why I made that decision. Like now, and this is like, I was told, like, you know, my child, like,
I would go say, to school. Obviously, you want something different.
I wouldn't, like my kid was like, you know, I want to go on tour with, you know, rappers on, so I would lose my mind. I'd be like, yo, go to school. You're bugging. But at that time, like, it just wasn't, it didn't seem like the smartest decision to me. And it panned out for me.
I guess your son is right about that age now, right? 15 or yeah. so? 14, 15? Is mm-hmm. it crazy for you to look at it and be like where you were when you mm-hmm. were your age?
Totally different places.
Totally. Totally different. We totally talk about that all the places. Time, you know, with
so what happens is no matter how much we, you know, I've been out in the streets since I'm 14 myself. So it's, you know, totally different. We out here and we fighting the fight and we're parents and we're just trying to change the system and change our kids and have them go to college, have them go to school. You know, my son graduated 4-year college in 2 years. We don't play that shit. We rule right. with an iron fist.
Both of us. When I hear him sometimes, like, that's right. Yep. Like,
and that's how that motherfucker go.
I think our biggest thing, and that's a culture of my biggest fear, and I believe Joe has the same thing, is to ever have our children have to go through things we went through just to survive, just to eat, just to have a roof over their head, just to have nice clothes, just to fit in with everybody else. Like, I've died before that happens. Like, and that's why I go so hard. And I believe that the same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah. And Joe, I wanted to take it back to Forest Houses for a second. That used to be called Godsville. Maybe it still is. I don't know.
How you know that?
I know my things. I, you know, figure it out.
That's the second half. I didn't know that.
So actually, a few weeks ago, I went down to the Allah School in Mecca. We talked to Allah B. Got me thinking about the gods
Allah
and earth.
B?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what was your relationship to the gods and earth growing? I know your friend Tony, who you talk about on your early records, was a god.
Was a god body.
Was a god body, yeah.
It's crazy. I got fucking goosebumps. My whole body's shaking right now. You know, I haven't eaten pork in 20-something years because of the gods. They explained to me that it's rat, that it's pig, that it's this, that it's that. And I stopped eating pork. I watched my whole projects turn from Forest Projects into Godsville. And everybody was a 5%er. And some people took the lessons in a positive way. Some people used it almost like if it was a gang and turned a negative way. They always said that I bear witness to the Nation of Islam. But, you know, I never joined the gods.
Right.
But, you know, I'm the god Joe Crack.
You slip a C cipher into your lyrics every now and
yeah.
then.
Point like a sniper, hyper than the hyper. Overlook my C-Cypher.
C-Cypher is 5% speak for a policeman. It means CO or cop.
You know, more than that. You know what I'm saying? Just because, you know, it was like I was in, literally they call my projects Godsville. So people would come from Brooklyn, Manhattan, uptown in the Bronx, everywhere in the Bronx, and they would come meet in my projects 1,000 deep. Mind you, I'm Joe Crack. Like, you know, I run the fucking projects too. So it's like, it was crazy. So I would sit there and hear these niggas talk they shit. And I'd just be like, yo, man, niggas dropping they shit. And then what was so crazy about being about a god, it's like, if you didn't know the mathematics, Or it was so weird. We had a guard. I can't say his name because, but we had a guard who was the smartest guard. Like, no one knew more knowledge about this guy. Some other guard came from somewhere and challenged him to like what's the mathematics? And they go on, and the guy I'm talking about would wear the kufi, the smartest Malcolm X class. He was the smart. Nah, to us, he was the smartest guy in the world. The other guy out, you know, caught him in a lie. Like, he was saying, he was like, emphatically non-cypher, God.
Non-cypher is a typical way among 5%ers to say no, with non substituting for N and cypher substituting for O. For a ton more about the 5% Nation, also known as the Nation of the Gods and Earths, tune in next week to episode 151 with Allah B, the man who runs the Allah School in Mecca, in Harlem. The school was, and still is, the first of the various Nation of Gods and Earths schools across the world. Allah B was taught by the man who founded the Gods and Earths, Allah, formerly known as Clarence 13X. Allah B also met Malcolm X several times. As you've heard here and will again next week, the 5% Nation has had a huge impact on hip-hop.
So, they go, and he proved it. Yo, they pounded him out. They gave the guard from my block a universal beat down. Yeah, wow. He was kicking him up his ass, chasing him around the block. I was like, oh my God. I thought that was like the smartest guy on earth. How quickly could the masses turn on him and pound him out? No, this shit was incredible. Yo, Ram, this nigga looked like Malcolm X with the Kofi, but like, he was smart. But they brought a guy that's even smarter than him. So let's say in your religion, Ellis, they brought the other rabbi. The Grand Rebbe. Yo, my man, like, what's going on here? And they would say, God, you teaching them wrong, God. You don't have the, you know, they just pounded this nigga out. I couldn't believe it. This was like the king of gods of my block. And it was like, yo, that was the rule. They gave him a universal beatdown.
Amazing.
Amazing shit.
And I know you were into graffiti before rap. You wrote Crack, which you've talked about.
That can't walk past a marker and a blank.
Even now?
I'm surprised he has not touched that wall. Yeah, he must still, not have any markers over there.
Still do throw-ups now and then?
I went to Australia, did a throw-up. Last year we were going to do the Graffiti Hall of Fame in Harlem over, but it started raining that day. And then I had to go out of town with the Tats crew.
The Tats crew is a long-running Bronx graffiti crew that have been working for over 2 decades. Also called the Mural Kings, they've worked closely with Joe throughout the years. They've also done artwork for many artists including Nicki Minaj, Missy Elliott, Metallica, Big Pun, Jennifer Lopez, Rick Ross, DJ Kool Herc, and Nas. They've even done corporate work for companies like Coca-Cola and Sony.
Tats crew just sent me a flyer. They're doing an expo. Bio just sent me an expo. So I'm going to go out there the 16th. So, you know, man, you know, graffiti's in my soul, man. It's in my blood. It's where Terror Squad came from originally. It was the TS was, you know, Terror Squad, you know, just from graffiti. This was actually originally a graffiti crew.
Uh-huh.
I got thrown out of maybe 6-8 schools when I was in junior high school just because of graffiti. And I was so dumb that I wouldn't realize that the next school read the memo. This guy writes graffiti. I'd be in there half a day doing throw-ups on the whole school. And they'd be like, look, the fuck out the school.
They send me to another school.
Like, it's crazy. Like, I'd be like, yo, how do they know? Like, if people just don't write down, he's getting thrown out of this school for graffiti. Like, this shit was crazy.
Nice. Would you ever do pieces?
I do pieces. I do throw-ups. Of course.
Nice. And when did you ran into the Tats crew, I'm assuming, early on?
I think I'm doing some pieces for Art Basel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for next year, Art Basel. Nice. I think I'm doing some pieces at Swiss's event. So it's going to be nice.
Nice. You know, I was looking at some stuff the other day, and I saw your very first appearance on Stretch and Bob with King Sun. Back in, well, 92, I think. So now you know the time. Plus, I will flip it, check the rhyme. I keep the dips even with the big belly. Cause I freak the funk like my man R. Kelly. So give me that honey love, yeah. You know what I'm thinking of. Goes the man with the master plan. And I got more rhymes than the beats got sand. They had it on tape? It's on YouTube. You can you can still find the audio.
Wow.
No, no video, unfortunately, but you can no still video. Hear it. Yeah. And it's, I think, some stuff that would end up on the first album. You did some verses that, like, wow. ended up there. What do you remember about going in? Well, first off,
Stretch and Bobbito?
Yeah.
Well,
that first
was,
time.
You don't know Stretch and Bobbito. You're too young for that. Uh-uh. Stretch and Bobbito is the first place. You know about
it? Anytime that I'm too young, Stretch, I'm like, yes, I don't know. Yes. Yeah.
You know, Stretch and Bobbito was the one place artists could go and, you know, freestyle and play their music. And they would, I think it was Thursday in the middle of the night. And you would go out there and you would really see Jay-Z. You would really see Nas. You would really see Big L. You would really see 50 Cent. You would really see the biggest niggas on earth waiting online, begging to do an interview and spit in there. Like, it was like, and then the one famous cypher is Big L and Jay-Z.
Yeah, yeah. Because
I'm the neighborhood vampa, punk rubber vampa. Fuck around, you find my silk boxes in your mother's hamper. Cops drop when my Glock makes the pow sound. I'm from a wild town, you know my style, clown, so bow down. Word up.
Say what?
95
say what?
Style. I got my man Jay-Z here.
Jay-Z. Boy, out now.
Check it out now. Hey, yo, brothers can beg and borrow. Still feel sorrow when Jay-Z like Zorro. Get in that ass, better luck tomorrow. I'm too much, nigga, so never should you rush. You need to slow down or get your ass toe down. Check it out.
I don't know who won. They went at it, bro. Like, him and Big L was like, Bar City, Boppy. Like, you know, it's like.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Bar City. And it was like, you know, this is just like legendary shit. And so going up there, if you let Stretch tell you, he said he was like scared of me, so he would play everything I told him to play. He's like, anything came in, Terror Squad or Digging in the Crates, just play the shit. He didn't want no problems with Fat Joe or Showbiz. Play the shit. I say, yo, Stretch, I thought you loved my shit. I did. But, I mean, like, I didn't want to fuck with you at all. I just wanted to make sure your shit got played and that's it.
Amazing.
Great guys, man. Great guys. And their documentary is amazing. And everybody did it. Eminem, yeah. Nas.
This is all live, New York.
Yo, this the big motherfucking Illmatic Nas. You know what I mean? Yeah, the album getting ready to come out in January. The name of that is Illmatic. At that point in time, your show was the most important show in the world.
It was a little single.
Jay-Z, that just shows you that in 2015, 16, nobody does shit like that no more. So for them to get the rap gods, every last one to, you know, celebrate their show, it was an amazing show.
Yeah.
The only guy I seen have it like that was DJ Ron G from the Polo Grounds. He was the only guy I would go to freestyle on the shit, and Biggie would be leaving and Tupac would be coming.
Peace to Ron G.
Well, see, that song was put together separately. Actually, Biggie gave me the 16 first because I had a song with Biggie. Strategized even a Big L thing because after Pac came to my studio, I had Pac on a song. This whole Tupac shit started from Biggie. Mm. Biggie's the one who introduced me to Tupac. Mm.
Like, you know, it's very rare where you have people like that had that type of power to get like the greats of all greats to show up at their crib and do it.
Yeah. And, you know, Remy, I was looking at the mixtape you put out after you, when you first got home and the I'm Around, and Go In, Go Off to me was like the standout track, was like the real spitter. There was just kind of like one punchline after the other.
Right.
The heroin from Houston, so I call it Whitney. It makes the fiend scream, so I call the fiend sick. Shoot at your crib, but I don't mean where your lips see. I mean the crib where your motherfucking kids sleep. You a square like that ugly ass Benz Jeep. I'm more hood than a Ku Klux Klan sheet.
What makes a good Remy Ma punchline?
I don't know. You know what? I try to do sometimes, like, when if I'm doing a song and I don't have to, like, especially on a song like Go and Go Off, there's no chorus, you know, it's just a crazy, you know, heartbeat. Like, I literally try to at least have a punch out every single bar. Like, I that is my mind state. The person, you know, who I love who does this sometimes is Lil Wayne. He's, like, probably one of the only people that I've seen, like, that every single line is a bar, and that is my my motive. Like, because anybody can make words rhyme. It's not easy to have a bar, to have a punchline, to have, you know, some type of metaphor.
You feel like you're writing a rhyme and you just rhyming.
Right, like, no, well, I don't say like nothing. That. Right,
but you do it.
Like, it happens, but like, go off. That's like, you know what? We have the same thing. Literally, that's my favorite track on that whole thing.
Yeah,
I feel like I do it at my shows. I do it, you know, when I'm performing, and it's always a crowd please. People are like, oh my god, like, because that's what people who are real hip hop heads, that's what they want to hear. That's what I want to hear when I listen to somebody, you know, music. That's what made me, you know, a fan of somebody like Lil Wayne, like, because I heard him, like, I'm like, yo, every bar he's going, he's not playing.
Ain't it funny how the fish do burn? Put your boy just relax like a fresh new perm. As the world in the barrel of the pistol turn, but we get it how we live, never live and learn. Gotta talk about,
and I know as somebody that writes that's not easy.
Yeah,
you know, it's easy to go. It's
really not easy, because as time goes by, it's pretty much everybody said every bar you could say in every other way. How do you get clever to take? So it's like taking some dope that's been stepped on
and 2,000
times
and making
it back pure, my nigga. That is so hard. So anybody who 2016. Like, to me, my favorites for doing that is Fred the Godson.
Beef years ago, we shot like shit. You rock jerseys for one in your Van Horn and leave you engine running, head blowing your Van Horn. Not with the game.
And now Fab. It used to be Jada. Mm-hmm. But now Fab.
We don't play when we roll. No Yahtzee. And I hate you niggas. No Nazi. But this.
He's always been good at that. But, yeah. You know. But really, Fred the Godson, I think, you know, when he's one of those guys who, like, really take the balls. The original guy was Finesse.
Right. Invented the simile, basically.
I got skills, so don't try approaching me. I keep rhymes in stores just like groceries.
Lord Finesse invented the punch. Did you know that, Rem? Lord Finesse invented.
I didn't know that.
The punchline. You know that, right?
Yeah.
On that. Finesse would go to the show and would stand there, and it'd be ram-packed, and it would just be niggas, like, they'd be just hitting each other. I'm standing there, like, on stage with them, because that's fucking, like, nigga, like, every fucking verse would just be like, and I remember we would rhyme, and it would be like, and Big L would come, Ella's the type, school to the bike, you know, but he's killing.
Yeah.
And then I would do my, you get fucked up, nigga, smacked with the Uzi, Fat Joe, nigga, like that. And they'd be like, ooh, Fat Joe. And that nigga, Finesse grab that mic, that crowd be like, he'd be like, Lord Finesse is the man that you got to hear. And then the vine is smooth and nagging.
I flow smooth like clouds in the atmosphere. I'm spectacular, so damn terrifying. That whack MC don't think about ever trying to diss or flip, cause what it boils down to, you won't survive the steps of me and round two. I stand and expand like a great man and swing a party like Tarzan and Ape Man. Say rhymes to the next.
Niggas be like, oh, like, you know, he was the one. That's why I said earlier, you know, digging in the crates, man. You know,
how many people outside that couldn't get in anywhere for that?
Be 2,000 niggas inside, 2,000 niggas outside.
Wow.
For Lloyd Finesse. Pandemonium.
Yeah. And so, Remy, one more thing about the I'm Around tape.
Okay.
Did you feel weird about the gun talk on that at all? Because just because, like, given what you had just, you know, gotten home for?
Yeah, I'm a felon. Yeah. My gun go off. Yeah, burn bitches. Yeah, I'm a blowtorch. Yeah.
No?
This is entertainment. This is freedom of expression. This is creativity. The name of the album is Plata Sublomo.
Right.
Money or bullets. We don't give a fuck. I'm a dance dad. I take my daughter to dance class. I go to church with her.
You know what? I think I'm gonna do it wrong. Where I talk my whole damn so like which I think because like my situation, like I can't rap about guns, and I'm just talk about guns the entire time.
Did you ever say a rap that you felt like maybe the PO like No conscious. I used to
maybe when I did a freestyle to the Future March Madness, and I was like,
don't say the bar.
No, it's okay because I said it already. I laid it down. You can go Google it. I'm sure they heard it. But I'm like, on parole, smoking blunts, but piss clean in the cup.
I never really gave a fuck. On parole, smoking blunts, but piss clean in the cup.
I'm like, yeah, they're gonna be checking my piss extra more now. Even though I'm cool with it. I'm gonna be good. But it's, I feel like that.
You
that's
know, me personally. When I could be not the first, but one of the first drug dealing rappers, like spitting about drugs and cocaine and pounds and the RICO law and this, like, I was like one of the first to really, like, my song was called Drugs is the Key to Success. Money is the key to sex.
The life is getting cash, drinking more, getting blessed. The games people play, the names people slay. It's just enough an ordinary day. Hustling is the key to success. Money is the key to sex.
The life is getting, like, I was a drug dealer rapper. First 2-3 albums, right?
Right.
And I remember at one point, all the niggas I grew up with was getting caught for Kingpin. And I noticed I started laying off some of the purer I just started becoming just a rapper. Because I was like, yo, these niggas, I might say some shit, get me locked up. Because, you know, I was a former drug dealer and now they taking everybody to jail. But it affected my music.
Wow.
I don't think it's like, my personal opinion, I hear females all the time, like, I see them, like, taking pictures, whole photo shoots, videos, whatever, and they'll have all these firearms and stuff, and no one asks them anything. No one says anything, because no one knows. It's like, you know, I guess, but because of my criminal history, you know, people are just a little nervous when I start talking about certain things in my rap. Like, you know, they take it a little bit more serious. But like Joe said, this is entertainment at the end of everything. You know, are you scared of Arnold Schwarzenegger or, you know, Sylvester Stallone are going to turn to Rambo? Oh, sure. Or, you know, the Terminator when you
and
see
that
them?
Is
no.
Definitely, I never like to use the race card or, you know, a style of music, but I don't know who lied to rappers and who lied to people that everything got to be the truth. Like, I don't say I robbed the liquor store and I'm going to rob the liquor store. You know, it's what I just said creatively. You know what I'm saying? Some days I talk positive on music. Some days I talk gangster shit, but that's all entertainment.
Yeah. And I want to talk about kind of your business aspects of your career for just a minute. So, Joe, you go way back, mid-90s. You had Fat Joe's Hip Hop Barbershop. Fat Joe's Halftime, the clothing store. What did you learn in those kind of early efforts at entrepreneurship?
I learned that the community don't really support you like that when you open up a motherfucking business smack dead in there. You know, motherfucker, I had a clothing store, and a guy I grew up with would literally come see me, and I would work at the clothing store. And guy would come with me and talk to me for 3 hours and go across the street and buy the same jacket I was selling at Dr. J's and fucking walk past my store like, all right, Joe, what love? Like, yo, nigga, I had the same Helly Hansen for sale on the wall. So that's why I got out of that business fast. I was like, oh, shit, I thought they would support, you know? It's not the case, you know? And in that business, you know, never get involved with a business that you can't really be hands-on. And if your employees quit, you can't run yourself.
Wow. And, you know, you've done a lot of stuff.
I can't cut hair.
Right.
Why own a barbershop? Motherfuckers quit, right. Boycott. You fuck.
Right.
Dan, I don't know why, but you've been looking slimmer lately. But ever since you ate them M&M and peanuts, it looked like your stomach grew. Yo, I'm telling you.
And, you know, you've done obviously a lot of stuff with Market America.
Mm-hmm. Market America is a product brokerage and internet marketing company started by J.R. Rittinger. Joe serves as the president of Urban and Latino Development. Lala Anthony, wife of the New York Knicks' Carmelo Anthony, is actually the brand ambassador of their line of cosmetics, Motives. While some people have accused Market America of being a pyramid scheme, Joe and others fervently defend it as a unique business opportunity. For more information, we've linked some relevant articles in the show notes.
A lot of people who sign up for, would it be fair to call it like a multi-level marketing and MLM?
No, it isn't.
No, why not?
Because it's two lines of distribution, it's binary. So what happens is, you know, to qualify to get in, to get, you know, you join, you have to get two people, one on the left side, one on the right side, and it goes straight down. There is no levels, there is no pyramids, there is nothing like that. And the what's remarkable about our business plan is that everybody gets 100% of 100% of 100%. So that means if the person all the way in the bottom sold some vitamins and they got 42 what we call business volume points, everybody directly on top of them receives those 42 points. Mm-hmm. And then at a certain threshold, you start receiving bonus checks, and then from there, you work your way towards residual income. And I don't know what question you want to ask, but I'll brief you. The business has been around for 24 years.
Yeah, you've known the owners for a while, right?
Yeah, I know them for 14, 15 years. The business has been around 24 years. People can't even open a Subway shop for 2 years without it getting closed. 24 years, made over $7 billion. And the people who do the business that we call on franchise owners have made $3.5 billion back in their pocket. On top of that, the business has made over 400 people millionaires. And that's residually. And these are regular people, average people from average backgrounds who just took a plan, a compensation plan that really, really works, applied it to their life and took it serious. And now they're doing pretty well for themselves.
Do you know more or less the percentage of people who make back their startup costs?
Not everybody does.
Like 900 something bucks to start.
Everybody should know it's $3.99.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. If you don't make that back and you're in the business of selling vitamins, makeup, weight loss, whatever, then you know, come on, bro.
$3.99.
Like, come on, man. Like, really be serious. If you want to open a McDonald's, it's $1.5 million. If you want to open up a bodega, it's $200,000.
Yeah,
if you
want to
open
up,
this fine,
we were looking at prices the
office
other day.
Here, it'd be a whopping 60, 70 grand a month. Like, you know, you got to. You're a business owner. You got to invest in your business. Mm-hmm. And if you can't make $400, wrong business for you.
Mm-hmm. And Remy, now that you're doing television.
Mm-hmm.
Remy is starring on season 6 of VH1's Love and Hip Hop.
How is that affecting your audience? Have you seen that? Like, have you seen your show guarantees go up? Have you seen a different type of people paying attention to what you do?
Maybe not so much the shows, like, because I've been, like, since I came home, I've been performing a lot, I think. People just genuinely wanted to see me perform and hear my music. But I can say that the demographic of the people that notice who I am, like, it's a different, like, it's certain people when they see
You're
me, they're
on
like,
fucking TV,
they're like,
man.
Listen, when people, it's certain people that they see me, they're like,
TV
oh my
free,
God, Remy, can I take a picture with you? Whatever, whatever. Like, I know if they're the rap Remy or the TV Remy. Like, I can tell, like, straight off the back.
You can tell,
like,
by the time they finish saying,
like,
hello.
That's TV. Like,
TV.
As soon as, like, me and Pap, we'd be out, we'd be like, that was definitely TV. That was TV. That was TV. Yes, that was TV. Like, it's you can definitely tell who's from TV. And you'll be surprised sometimes, too. Some of the people that, you know, it's like, oh, my God, I watch you on TV. I'll be like, what are you doing watching? Now you look like a good, wholesome person.
No, I know that. Yo, let me tell you something. When I was locked up.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013, Joe served 3 months for tax evasion.
It was this one nice correction officer lady. She was older. She wouldn't bother nobody. She'd just, you know, everybody get their job done, whatever. She was actually one of the very few good ones. And she was like, yo, I got to get home. I was like, why? She was like, man, that motherfucker love Hip Hop Atlanta. That bitch turning up tonight. I was like, oh, what are you doing looking at this stuff? What are you doing? I could not believe this woman was watching this. But, you know, I guess it's, you know, everybody's fix, you know?
Yeah. You know, Joe, I was looking at, you know, obviously a lot of old interviews and stuff to prepare for this. There was this interview with Ego Trip back in 95. And I'm going to quote you. I'm going to change some of the words for stuff I don't feel comfortable saying. But basically, you said, if you choose to be a gangster rapper talking about hurting someone, you're going to be forced to hurt someone. And I don't know how you felt when you say that, but it read almost kind of sad. How'd you feel in the early years having to, like,
I really didn't care for people? Human life at one point. And 95, which means I was only rapping for 1 year, I was still 1 foot in the streets. I was 2 foot in the street, a toenail in the music industry.
Stupid.
You know, so I didn't give a fuck about nobody. Not that I think I was going to get rich. I was going to get this. I was pretty much a fucking, they got to have a name for it, like a maniac. You know what I'm saying? And I came in this business ready to smash anybody. Like, you know, like, I don't give a fuck. They gonna know who I is. That was a very immature, poor mentality, which I don't take nothing back from that because I was a young kid then. But, you know, it is made me who I am today. But at the same time, I'm nothing like what I said at 9-5. I just told you it was entertainment. I just told you it was, you know, I'm a dance dad. I just told you, you know, that's a reflection of a kid that grew up, you know, on his own since he's 14 years old, sold drugs, been in many violent situations, and was Fat Joe the Gangster. You know, you quoting a line from Fat Joe the Gangster. That was literally my name. You know how your name is Remy Ma? Mm-hmm. My original name of rap on my first album was Fat Joe the Gangster. My commercial to my album was me chopping someone up with one of them fucking swords like in Scarface.
Right.
With the blood, with the motherfucker shaking, like, you know, I really believe the hype.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, speaking of chainsaws, I think it was the FloJo video.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's a shot in
that. But there was actually a 15-second commercial that ran on BET.
Using part of the video.
You can find it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Where it was Fat Joe the Gangster. You got a flow, Joe. Me chopping the motherfucker up. That was the commercial to the album.
Amazing. In that video, there's a shot of a bunch of people throwing something into the water. You can't quite tell what it is.
Crazy. That was a.
What was it?
I think that was a skid, like a. Like one of them wood skits, pallets, mm-hmm. that somebody would put whatever on there.
It's almost like a refrigerator or something. It was big and white from what I could
see. So it must have been an old refrigerator or some shit. It was something industrial.
Right.
It wasn't nothing. Nobody was dying. Industrial. But I'll tell you what came out of that video. We all had guns. This is a fact. You can go check Alan Grumblatt for this quote. I don't know where the footage is at, but it was maybe 50 of us and maybe a good 45 had guns in that video.
Yeah.
And we had a scene, yo, Rem, we had a scene where everybody pulled out the hammers. Now, we thought we was the hardest niggas ever created.
They crazy. Right? Yeah.
So we were like, 1, 2, 3, boom, boom, boom. Everybody shooting in the air, right, Rem? Mm. But we could not use the footage because fucking Rhino, out of 45 niggas, we had one nigga that was smack dead in the front that was going,
like you scared.
And he looked pussy while everybody else had the ice grill on, shooting their guns in the air. He was like,
I'm weak.
And he fucked up the host. It to this day probably would have been most classic scene in hip hop history. Because it was real guns. Everybody busting off. 45 niggas. The one guy was going like this.
Oh my God.
We didn't know how to blur him
back then, yeah.
We could have fucking blurred him or pulled him somewhere else in the back or some shit.
Amazing. The Jealous Ones Still Envy album. It's like 01, not that long after Pun passed. I noticed there's a lot of looking back on that record, a lot of like looking back at your adolescence.
Raised by the streets, mesmerized by the dealers and the places they eat. And when they blaze the heat, I was the shorty to take the hand off. Run upstairs, try to sneak the gap past grandma. This is how it should be done.
not about like pun or so your jealous family ones and stuff, envy, but
jealous
like
ones still envy.
Jealous ones still envy.
Okay.
A lot of like looking back on your childhood and stuff. Do you think that what happened with Pun and then other family members around that time kind of caused you to be more reflective?
Oh, of course, man. That was real. You know, I was going through depression when I wrote that album too, because, you know, Pun had just passed. My sister passed. My grandfather passed. I was actually seeing a therapist, like, you know, little did you know, going every week to see a therapist to, you know, get back regular life. Every day I woke up, it could have been the sunniest day in the world. It was black clouds. And, you know, I you know, so I was really in a deep space. You know what? I need to take a listen to that album now and just really see what I was going through.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because it was a crazy time of my life.
And, you know, Remy, I saw an interview with you right towards the end of when you were locked up, where you said you were worried about getting out and having, you know, the kind of like post-trauma, post-traumatic stress that might come.
Oh, I definitely have PTSD.
Being locked up.
I'm like, when I first came home, I got diagnosed. They say I have PTSD. Who would not have post-traumatic stress disorder?
From something.
If one day, you know, you're at the top of your game.
How do you get off of that?
Like I don't know. I guess you just the same way you get off of depression. Like you eventually, you know, get better. But you know, you take a girl. She's 25 years old, and she's at the top of her game. She's, you know, she just put out an album. All the singles from her album are doing well. I had so many things. They were trying to do a reality show. This is before everyone was on reality show. They were trying to do a reality show. I had so many different deals on the table, endorsements, and I catch this case. And literally, like, it's so crazy because I've seen so many people throughout my life go through trials and stuff like that. I never seen nobody literally go through, get locked up, and 7 months later they're in jail with, like, you know, all of these years of time. So I've never, ever seen it. Like, I've seen people out on bail for years. So it was just like, in the blink of an eye, I was just gone. Like, they didn't give me a chance to, you know, pack my house, situate my son, anything. It was just like, remand, to jail you go, 8 years. And it was like, that was just my life for, you know, those 6.5 years. Luckily, you know, I was able to get out sooner. Technically, had I not, you know, got out with good time and things like that, I would have just came home last week. March 27th, I would have just came home. So, you know, it's like, it's crazy. And then you get out and it's just like one day they're just like, all right, you can go now. They open the doors. And you're like, where do I start? Like, where do I begin to start my life? Like, I had to do, I mean, the simplest things. I had to get an ID. I had to go take another driver's license test. I didn't have any clothes at all, period. It was like I had to get my life back. And a lot of people never get it back. Like, you know, I was fortunate enough to not be, you know, one of the, you know, people that, and I don't want to call them weak people, but let's just say I wasn't one of the people that go to prison and just get on a whole. I could have been like everyone else and got on a whole bunch of drugs that just zoned me out and I, you know, just wouldn't even realize where I was at, but I wanted to be clear. I wanted to think clearly. I wanted to be able to have a game plan for when I came home. And it was just like, you, like, even now, like, certain times, like, oh, it's count time, or, you know, certain things that I wear, just certain things that people do every day, you don't realize this is just not available to you when you're in prison for so long. Like, as of right now, I spent most of my adult years in prison as opposed to, you know, being free. My entire marriage, I've been married almost 8 years. You know, almost 7 of them was spent with me in prison. So, yeah.
Is there stuff, are there specific things you've found since you got out there that are triggering incidents or types of things?
It's mostly like different times of the day. Like, I definitely don't sleep throughout the night. Like, when you're in prison, they do rounds. They come around like once every hour throughout the night to make sure everyone's alive. No one's, you know, doing anything that they're not supposed to be doing. And I'm a light sleeper, so it would wake me up. And it's crazy because even now, you know, after being home like 18 months, I still wake up like literally like every hour or so throughout the night. And it's just really, really crazy. Like certain things, like I don't trust anybody. I don't trust people. I'm very leery about who I have around me. And, you know, I was never like that. I was just like, oh, okay, sure. Come on, come to my house. We're going to have a pool party. And it's like everything was cool. But it's like, and then you get to see people who really are not for your best interest. Like, you know, people, before I left, people was like, you know, oh, I go, anything you need, I got you. And then you need them and they're like nowhere to be found at all, period. And it's weird because now that things are like, you know, looking up and looking better, people like are mad at me. Like, you know, you don't call me and, you know, I haven't seen you. I'm like, yo, how many times I haven't seen you? Months went by, years went by when I didn't see you or hear from you. Why is it anything wrong with it? Like, I'm used to years going by. Like, even my mom, she gets upset because it'll be like a holiday and I won't call. And she's like, you know, you didn't even call me. I'm like, my, you know how many times this holiday passed when I was away and I didn't speak to you? So, like, I'm just used to it. And it's not because I try to not be, you know, insensitive to other people's feelings, but I just don't think about, like, even my birthday. Like, my first birthday was last year that I celebrated. Well, and I didn't celebrate. It was like my first birthday, and it was like, yeah, it's your birthday, you're home. And I'm just like, I've been numbing myself to the fact that I had a birthday for the past, you know, 7 birthdays. So, you know, it's serious. It's a very traumatizing experience.
Yeah. And I guess this applies to both of you since you both had obviously traumatic things happen in your lives. I wrote an article a little while ago about people who use rap, who use hip hop, you know, writing rhymes, releasing songs, seeing the reaction to those songs. They've found it to be helpful processing trauma.
We'll link to Sean's article, Can You Treat PTSD with Hip Hop, in the show notes for this episode.
Do you think that rap has been helpful in that respect? Do you, either of you find it therapeutic?
It's been very therapeutic for me. First of all, hip hop has changed my life. Without hip hop, I'd probably be dead or in jail for sure. 1,000,000%. That's not a cliche. Making music has definitely been therapeutic for me. You know, there's been some times I've had friends pass away or times I've gone through, you know, serious situation with my wife or gone through somebody being ill, you know what I'm saying? And like maybe a couple of years ago, my son Joey was in critical condition because, you know, he's autistic and he kept suffering from these seizures. Like he kept having like one after the other, after the other, after the other. And, you know, the only thing I could do was go to the studio after I leave the hospital and just make music and just open up my mind. Other than that, anything anybody was telling me at the time was like irrelevant. Like I didn't even want to live. Like when your child goes through something so bad like that, you're not even living. You're like walking around blank. So, but I would go to the studio, put on the beat, and then just start feeling like my normal self till I left the studio.
And what about you, Remy? Have you found?
I don't know. I'm a little bit different. Like I have to be in a certain type of space and able to, in order to be able to make music. Like when I was locked up, everyone thinks like I should have these whole bunch of rhyme books and all
this is the big
things,
cliche like, about prison that's never true, right? That you sit around and write 10 albums while you're locked up or whatever.
First of all, you're deep depressed. Like I haven't seen anyone unless they're literally a lunatic crazy idea mind that's in prison.
There's some
happy,
dumb fucks.
That's just happy to be there. Like
you're wearing some dumb names.
Like I said, lunatics. So
lunatics.
And no normal person is happy to be there. You know, you're not in a good space. And then there's other things that you have to do while you're in there. That they make you do, that you know, you don't really just have all this free time to just sit there and write all these great hit records. And then when I came home, it was the same thing. Like, I had so much on my mind with my personal life, it was hard for me to just go in and zone out how I wanted to. And it wasn't until I was able to fix, you know, the little things that, just daily life, getting a doctor, getting, you know, my crib situated, getting, like, just stuff to make myself comfortable that I was able to actually, you know, go in how I wanted to. So, you know, I'm the total opposite. Like, I don't want to hear nothing. I don't want to hear B. I don't want to hear nothing. Get it out of here. Let me fix this first, and then we can do whatever we want. When I'm making music, I feel like that's all I should have to do. Like, I tell people something like, I'm a rapper. All I should have to do is rap. I don't want to have to do all these other things down the line. Let me just go and just rap, and that's it. It's true. Like, and you find yourself...
So you're kind of shaking your head at that.
Fucking right.
Because you find yourself doing all this other stuff. You're like, yo, can I... Let me just rap and just get money and just do that. Like, you find yourself wearing all these other hats and taking on all these other responsibilities.
Straight out of cell 12, a hell fell on my lap. A nigga was born a rap by drug tells and all the rats. Dishes from Chef Junior. Now that's Italiana. Chicken Parmigiana. Bocce with my paisanas. I told my Hazana, Radira Mayana. Six bad bitches, some marijuana with God can confine us. If you could see the pictures and the scriptures that the bitches sent me, hopped in the ghost, my whiz jumped in the Sister Bentley. Woo! That's the only rhyme I wrote in jail, man. And I wrote that to like Phil Collins. Like I had no beats.
Whatever was on the radio.
I kept rewinding. I've been waiting for this moment.
I'll let you hear like one of the rhymes that I wrote. I actually did an interview and I was like rhyming for like 6 minutes straight.
Just went to the doctor and got a rare diagnosis. They said that I got illest bitch scoliosis. That comes from having too much swag in large doses and spitting that shit when your flow's too potent. These hoes want it, but it ain't contagious. And one of the symptoms is an excessive amount of haters. Your flow's sweet like now or latest. Rap about it now, hope you do it later. Y'all should call me Remy Muhammad Ali, because I'm the greatest, the best in all classes, no matter what the weight is.
That's the one you wrote in there.
I was there a really long time, so I wrote some rhymes nowhere near as many as people thought, though. Those are like good ones. I wasn't depressed every day. Like,
nobody give a fuck. The only reason I wrote that rhyme was because the guy locked up in the cell with me, my man Chef Junior, he was like, yo, write a rhyme, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, ride the fuck around. I was like, nah, I'm good. I might fuck around, quit rapping, do this Market America shit when I come home. And he was like, nah, man, you rap, Fed. You a fucking icon. You know what's crazy? Chef Junior called me. We was in Dykeman or something like a week ago. And he said, I fucking told you you had it in you, bro. I fucking told you. I was like, yo, Shane. He's like, the shit's number one. Like, I was like, yo, he was going crazy. Me and this nigga, man, he was cool. You know, I can't really vouch 100% because I know a guy for 3 months. But, man, he was the coolest nigga for three months.
Not for nothing. And ever. 3 months, like, is not 3 months here.
Right.
Oh, hell.
Like, it's a totally different thing. Like, and those 6.5 years, I feel like I did, like, 20 years. There's people, like, my friends that I grew up with, like, not all of them, but I'm more close with the people that I did my bit with than people that I actually grew up with. Like, seriously, it's sad and it's crazy.
You did real time with them, though.
Yeah.
Like, serious. Like, I know how they're going to move. Like, when I was supposed to come home and they didn't let me come home the day I went home, like, I had people who, like, still are going to be there probably for the next 10, 15 years, risking, you know, ended up in a box, doing all types of shit because they wanted this. Like, yo, they wanted me out of there. They was sneaking me mail, making phone calls for me. It was crazy.
This was the thing where your release ended up being delayed by like a day.
Yeah. Like that day, like it was to the point like...
Did you know it was just going to be a day at the time?
No, I didn't. No, I thought it was going to be at least 6 months. And then if it wasn't 6 months, my max, like I told you,
so
my
that
max,
day was crazy.
My max day, I told you, I would have just came home last week.
I know, but that date, that one day.
I got you for the Angie call.
On July 21st, 2014, about a week and a half before she was due to be released from prison, Remy Ma conducted a 14-minute-long phone interview with Power 105 host Angie Martinez. Prison officials claimed that this call violated their rules against third-party calls when an approved caller transfers a phone call to someone else, and this call was initially reported to be the reason for a delay in Remy's release. However, Remy has denied this, and later reports blamed the delay on an altercation with an inmate that occurred on the same day.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you what's up. Let me tell you. I didn't even care. At that point in my bed, I was like, what they gonna do? Make me do 6 more months? Okay. Even if they take away that date. I max out in 2016. This is 2014. I'm like, I max out in 2016. I've been here since 2008. I don't care. Like, and I was telling Pat, like, my mother's on the phone crying her eyes out. My son is crying. I'm like, yo, the worst case scenario, I'll be home in 18 months. There's nothing they can do about that. Unless I do something to somebody between now and then and catch a new charge. And that's just how I was on it. Like, not in 18 months. When I first got there, it was the most dangerous time.
In jail is that it's a time bomb. And although you're cool with people, you really don't know their mentality, and you really don't know. Somebody could flip. Like me personally, I think I should have been dead or stabbed or extorted in jail. Like I was supposed to go to a Martha Stewart camp, and they sent me in a building.
The kind of jails Pun used to joke about.
Yeah, exactly.
They got jails with swimming pools.
Right? But they sent me in a building where the biggest drug lords on earth were fighting cases where they were facing 200,000 years. And I'm going to the visit with these niggas on the elevator with them. Suppose one of them was like, let's just add Fat Joe's death to the 2,000 year and stab him in his fucking neck.
Right.
Yeah, we had this shit, right? Nah, it's crazy.
They put you three. He has 3 months. And they put him
with they got me with
five life sentences.
Gordo Lindo, the guy who got caught with $280 million. Like, fuck am I doing with these niggas, right?
Yeah.
So I and they thinking I'm the leader of the Latin Kings, and I never been in a gang my whole life.
Right.
So they kept questioning me every day coming up, the fucking wardens and all. I'm like, are you the leader of the Latin Kings? I was like, Latin Kings? Fuck are you talking about?
Which seems insane given that you've lived your life publicly since you were, you know, 22 years old. Right, you've had a camera on you.
That's fucking crazy.
At the time or whatever.
They bought a rap article that said Latin King. Like, they took him about
and they
rap.
They took that to mean...
thought I was the Latin King. So, but what was crazy was, I'm going to tell you a quick one.
Yeah.
And we can end it. I had to get off the floor. So I got me a job. And the only job they gave me, mind you, Little Kim was wiping off tables for the warden. Lauryn Hill was teaching people music lessons. T.I. was, you know, Fat Joe was scrubbing plates in the fucking kitchen.
It like, makes you feel any better. I was in shoe.
Hey, yeah, you was in shoe?
Yeah, I was in shoe.
Yeah, you was in shoe.
Shoe is special housing unit or solitary confinement.
So, that's crazy. So I turned around, but they give you a break for like 2 hours where everybody sits down and the niggas start talking, eat whatever, and I be like, I'm like, yo, my man, what you in there for? Niggas like, no, I got 6 years. They caught me with like $500,000 counterfeit Monday. Oh, yeah, yeah. What you in here for? Kidnapped two bitches because they took my money and this and this. Yeah. What you in here? Shot three people because this and this and that. What you in here? The youngest nigga in Jacksonville to get kingpin. Yo, crack. So what? Well, unlike you guys, I'm actually innocent. All right, get the fuck out of here. Niggas start throwing shit. Crack, you fucking. Really, I am. Really, I was set up in there. Motherfuckers die laughing. They like, yo, they want to die. They like, they don't believe it. They're like, oh, crack, you full of shit. Really? Really? I'm innocent. I'm looking at him. It's crazy.
Well, you know, obviously I keep you guys here all day, but one final thing, Joe, you know, you don't talk about this if you don't want to, but I know you go way back with Zulu Nation. What do you think about the stuff with Bam?
What stuff with Bam?
Okay, you hadn't heard?
No.
Okay, well, we can talk about
what
it.
What happened with Bam?
Do you legit not know?
Swear to my mother
legit
died.
Don't know. I don't know either. Oh, okay. Like, this
I don't know either. What happened with Africa Bambaataa?
Oh. Wow. Okay. A guy
recently?
Yeah, like a few days ago.
Uh-huh.
Politician in the Bronx, Ron Savage, is that his name? I think came out in an interview and accused Bam of molesting him when he was a kid.
What?
Yeah, he's a politician. I never heard that either.
Yeah.
Hold on, Google.
Yeah, I never heard that.
Okay.
That wasn't even on the news or nothing, right?
It made some headlines and stuff. Absolutely.
It would make the news.
Yeah.
Right?
I didn't even hear it.
Yeah.
When now? We were in New York all
this
time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that case would be over, right? Is the statute of limitations on that?
I believe there is. I forget the exact details. And I don't think he wasn't talking about pressing charges.
A guy, too.
Yeah.
It's tough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Tough situation because
7 days ago.
You don't know people's credibility and also, you know, what guy stands up there and says some shit like that. You know what I'm saying? Stuff, I don't know nothing about it.
This was 7 days ago, the latest one, the last one, earliest, shall I say.
What it says?
It says, King Kamanzi, the international spokesperson for the Universal Zulu Nation, reached out to XXL to say that the child molestation claims against Africa Bambaataa are 100% untrue. The nation is demanding, demanding not only that Ron Savage apologize to Bambaataa and the Zulu organization, but to every single person who's ever been a victim of sexual abuse. He's sending us an official statement from the nation, and we'll update this when we receive it. The original story says hip-hop pioneer Afrika Bambaataa has been accused of child molestation. Former New York State Democratic Committee member Ronald Savage is accusing a Bronxburg DJ of molesting him as a teenager. Savage made the claims public this week, March 29th, with the release of his new book, Impulse, Urges, and Fantasies. Savage says that the Soul Sonic Force leader forced him to participate in oral sex from the time he was 13 years old. Then they start talking about all the stuff that he did.
He wrote a book.
Middle-aged, yeah.
Well, the guy is probably 56 because it says Bambaataa is now 58, was around 15 years old when he formed the Zulu Nation. According to Savage's story, if the molestation happened when he was 13, the incidents began in 1979.
He wrote a book, yeah.
Right. It's 35 years ago. So he's like almost 50 years old. Yeah. What?
I don't know.
I know this name pretty well.
What's Bam. Shot 97? Is that like what they Bam. Call High 97?
A lot of kids. Never heard anything like that. You know how close Smitty and Mickey and Mike and B.O.? No way.
Okay, well, if we can end on a little more of an up note. You know, you're from the Bronx. You were a few days shy of being three when Kool Herc threw his first party. What are your early memories of hip-hop in the Bronx?
Oh, man. That was the times, man.
And from an expert, favorite break. Is that your favorite breakbeat?
Nah. My favorite record to hear walking in a block party or jam was Fat, Fat, Fat Boy, 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 Boy.
You were.
Fat, Fat, Fat Boy, 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 Boy.
Now we may be a little chubby, but don't feel slow. We guarantee you one thing. We can surely come to the party and rock the house. As we harmonize, let's start to turn it out. So put the fresh move and take.
They would ring ricochet off the walls, and I felt like it was calling me fat, fat, fat boy, 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 boys.
That was better than the show?
No way. Fat, Fat Boys was not better than the show. The
show was crazy. Bim, 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 I hear that record bim, now. Bim, bim. That's like the first hip hop record bim, I ever heard in my life.
But that was a good one to hear.
I lived on Forest Avenue, like down the block from McKinley Projects.
Well, I didn't know you live around my hood.
I told you that 1,000 times.
Forest Avenue.
Where the Met supermarket was.
That's my hood. Forest Project.
I was across the street from the school.
McKinley across the street from Forest.
I was across the street. This was the school. This is my building right here.
I know where you was at by the Met Food.
The other end of the block was Met Food. And then was the Projects. But they was having a big...
was my first spot right on Forest by Bronx Regional High School down on them stairs, which was the first crack rock I sold.
They,
wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
They had a block party there, and I've had no business outside, I'm sure. But I'm like, I'm on the stoop and I'm looking and it's just mad people. My whole block, like, we couldn't even, like, really, like, leave off the stoop. Like, it was like, that's like, that was the, like,
danger
to line. But after you go past the stoop, it was like grounds to go tell mommy you was, like, in trouble. Like, that's it.
Well,
and they was out there doing a show and people was going crazy. Like, I remember it clearly.
Who was out there? Like, Dougie Fresh
and were performing the show. On a block party on my block.
I never knew that.
Yes, I remember it clearly.
I'm 5 minutes from you. I never seen them do that.
What the fuck is this?
No.
Why is everyone going crazy? At the time, I have like Boy George posters and Tina Turner posters on my wall.
Oh my God. Is it real?
Right.
Well, me personally, I grew up in hip hop, being in the Bronx. So I recall watching, you know, Grandmaster Flash and Melly Mel and them playing softball, basketball in the park. Love Bug Starsky was from my neighborhood. Fantastic Five, Little Ikey C, Ruby D was from my neighborhood. Mr. Ness lived right next door to him. My brother was a crate boy for Grandmaster Flash, carrying the crates.
And
the
only way up was
getting
too.
So I grew up in hip hop. Like I watched it go from the Hustle, the Bee Gees, to hip hop. To be real, got to be real. To be real.
There's like 85 records that came out in 79, 80 with that as their beat.
Well, I'm kicking rock well, cause the rock so swell. Every time you hear my name, it rings a bell.
Well, I'm Dibby guys, it's so socialized. But how we gonna make the black nation rise? While you party down, y'all can shock the house. Dip down, rock, shock the house.
Young ladies make the world go round the way they look and walk. Well, the fellas say they could live without them, but that's a lot of talk.
If we love the beat, y'all, that bump up the beat, y'all. Now, if you're dancing on the floor, sitting in the seat, or rocking to the beat, say you want the beat.
To be real was the best shit ever.
Yeah.
And a heartbeat, boom, 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 boom.
I'm put almost 40, 39. So, yeah.
And you know about this.
He did his homework.
It's crazy because, you know, just being there as a fan was just hip-hop history. I remember watching Grandmaster Flash and Melly Mel buy their first 190 Benzes. They came in 6 white Benzes to the hood, and they was driving back to back. And I remember looking at the Grammys when Melly Mel came out with Chaka Khan and had the glove and came through the back of the thing. And I was just like, oh my God, I watched this guy play basketball all the time. And like, this shit, I was born in hip hop. Like, there's just no way to explain it to you. Every corner I fucking turn, well, I don't know if you ever heard of Whippy Whip Wop. Well, Whippy Whip Wop used to get dusted. And he would just turn around, he would smoke angel dust, and he would turn around, you know, in a circle, like shit that you would like, right? We'll be dizzy and fall. But he would turn and he would never get dizzy, and he was on, and this was a fucking, he was Whippy Whip Wop. He was like one of the biggest DJs in, and just Prince Whippy Whip. He smoked angel dust in my block, and he would just keep going and keep going, 2 hours in a circle, like, don't stop, Whip Wop. Don't stop, Whip Wop. Don't stop. You know, and then they had a nigga named Cuckoo Cow was a rapper. So every time he walked by, we would be like, Cuckoo Cow, cuckoo cow. And the whole crew be doing the cuckoo cow. And the motherfucker come through. Like, we had a theme song for cuckoo cow. Man, I was in the fucking cesspool, man. I was in the fucking mecca of hip hop. And they all look at me like a little brother when I see Melly Mel, when I see Mr. Ness, when I see Cash, when I see any one of them. They remember the little fat kid, little Joey.
Used to hang out.
That used to be in the jams. And that, from there, they don't remember Fat Joe, the rapper. They have not once, and I know they're proud of me, said, I'm proud of you. I respect you as a rapper and artist. They look at me as little Joey from Forest.
Right.
Bottom line, to this day. You know what's crazy is they did a documentary on TS. BET has like this new like 30-30. And they did Bad Boy. They did Death Row. They did No Limit. They did Terror Squad. And they fucking called in Ralph McDaniels. And Ralph McDaniels brought footage of me before I even rapped. Puff Daddy was in the footage. They say me and Puff Daddy, before I was even a rapper, he caught me. You remember Ralph McDaniels used to go to all the parties?
Yeah, yeah.
He caught me in the party. 16, 15 years old, ice grilling shit. It's going to be on the thing. So, like I said, you know, Ralph McDaniels, man, you know, being that we're talking about legendary shit, first of all, it would be Diamond D. Second, it would be Red Alert. Third would be Ralph McDaniels, because Ralph McDaniels, it was no MTV, it was nothing. And he just fucking, thank God he liked me since I was a little kid. And he would put me, like, people were bugging out. Matter of fact, I was the drug dealer. I was the drug dealer in the hood and hosting Video Music Box. At, you know, at he would be like, time. Yo, and used to host. Fly, niggas be like, yo, this nigga, who's this fat Spanish nigga? The niggas, Dapper Dan Dalt wearing the flyest shit, hosting the shit, icy. They like, yo, who's this nigga? And that's how, you know, I think the rap community first learned about Fat Joe through seeing me host Video Music Box.
Wow.
This shit was crazy. So much hip hop history, bro.
Yeah, I mean, we could be here all day. Obviously, I want to let you guys get some rest. You're in the middle of a...
When Biz Markie brought out Big Daddy Kane.
For the first time.
First time ever. And he spit that rhyme, that supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
I go on and on and on and until a bright Shirley Murdoch morning. Cause I'm a pimp, hear the primp, just the imp terror, bringing much terror in your era. I'm ready, willing, and I'm able to bust the move. Never use a barbershop, I got my homeboy's food. Cooling out with
and niggas, I literally... Literally, Big Daddy Kane had a Jamaican hat on. I literally watched guys, because that's when it was fun. That's when niggas wasn't killing each other. That was when it wasn't no guns. Everybody was fun. Hip-hop was fun. Niggas was dancing in videos, like, having fun. I literally watched human beings, rap fans, try to run up the wall. Like, he ripped it so much that the crowd... went so crazy that they were trying to run up the wall. Like, I was seeing them trying to run, defy gravity. They couldn't even control themselves. People were trying to run up the wall. Like, because that nigga came on and Bismarck, he was like, yo, I got my man Kane. And then he was like, I'm a rap promoter. Then when he got to that supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, I go on and on and on and like a bright Shirley Murdoch morning. I'm a pimp, niggas. Yo, man, if they could slit their wrists and pass the razor around, like niggas was losing their minds.
Slit wrists and pass the razor around.
No, but I'm trying to tell you, yo, Ram.
That is a South Sick in so many
this
ways.
This is when, yo, Ram, this is when people would exaggerate. Like, they really enjoyed it. So I watched Finesse bring out Big L for the first time. I watched me bring out Big Pun for the first time.
You watched KRS do Bridges Over for the first time.
Well, I heard him do Bridges Over. So what happens is, you know, I'm South Bronx. I'm from there. And so I'm the biggest fan. And that's when KRS used to wear the Bob Marley shirt. And I was the number one fan. I'd be at all his shows. And then when they start the South Bronx, killer that noise.
You love to hear the story again and again of how it all got started way back when. The monument is right in your face, sitting
By mentioning the tracks South Bronx and Kill That Noise, Joe is referring here to the Bridge Wars, the name given to the epic back and forth between Marley Marl's Juice Crew and KRS-One's Boogie Down Productions. The name is in reference to MC Shan's track, The Bridge, a song about hip-hop's history in the Queensbridge housing projects. KRS misinterpreted it, perhaps intentionally, as saying that hip-hop itself started in Queensbridge and dissed them for ignoring the Bronx. KRS gave this response in the track South Bronx, which led to Shan's Kill That Noise, to which KRS responded with The Bridge Is Over.
South Bronx, the South, South Bronx, South Bronx, the South, South Bronx. South
this jam is dedicated to you and your boys, and if you knew what I knew, then you'd kill that, kill that, kill that, that, noise, that, noise, that, noise.
That's it. The bridge is over, the bridge is over. Bye-bye. The bridge is over, the bridge is over. Hey, 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 the bridge is over.
In recent years, KRS himself has stated that the real reason he attacked the Juice Crew in the first place was because he was mad at Juice Crew leader Mr. Magic for rejecting one of KRS's demos. After a nearly 30-year hiatus, the Bridge Wars recently reignited when MC Shan, in an April 2016 interview on the Murder Master Music Show, said that he felt that he and KRS had never really battled and suggested that the two should battle on stage, offering a short sample of the rhymes he had ready.
Nigga, use the hip-hop Cyrano de Bergerac. Not only is your flows, but your words are whack. Now whack, look up yeah. A picture.
In a follow-up appearance, Shan unleashed 3 minutes of rhymes directed at KRS after the show's host claimed that KRS had called him, demanding an apology.
Marley saved your ass because I could have did it back then and been serving time for life for killing your ass with an ink pen. Call yourself the Blastmaster? Go ahead, cock that shit back. And the only thing you're going to get is this foot up in your shit crack. I'm just trying to stop.
In response, KRS released a vicious diss track called Still Hugging a Nut, S-H-A-N.
I'm the free man. Where your show's at? I took you out in 86 and the whole world knows that. For 30 years, nigga, you ain't spitting no rap. Queensbridge hates your ass. You can't go back.
See, he was going up against the biggest rap crew ever. And they had a monopoly because they had Mr. Magic, who ran BLS, who was only playing the Juice Crew. So now you say it was him against MC Shan, Shantae, Roxanne, it was Kooji Rap, it was Craig G, it was Master Ace, it was Big Daddy Kane, it was Biz Markie, it was Mr. Magic. This was the Coca-Cola or Pepsi of rap. Like, be clear, every last one of them niggas was like Kooji Rap. They all was platinum. The whole, you don't know none of these niggas I'm talking about, right, Rem? Yo, it was like 10 of them. And that chick Roxanne on tape, she was cold as fuck. You need
I know
to
her
listen
personally.
To
her. I know her.
She was dead nice at the time. I'm Shantae. Rhymes, chippy rhymes are fresh. Nigga, I'm Shantae. Like, yo. Yeah. So he was going up the most amazing powers that be with one single. So even me, the number one, to this day, that's my idol.
Yeah.
The number one KRS-One fan. No way on earth was he going to win. Like, no way on earth was he going to beat these guys. Like, it's in. You know them people I tell you about, Rem, to ignore?
Yeah.
You know the people that...
They.
No. Well, he was they. I know. Yo, Rem. He was they. And came out of nowhere and demolished niggas. So at the time, I never even heard of reggae music. I never heard of reggae, Jamaican music, nothing like that. So and then I remember it was cold as fuck. And I had a Walkman on, and I'm just going to visit my man in the back of the building. And Red Alert is like, brand new answer, diss record to the Juice Crew, KRS-One. So I'm like, I'm walking, I'm like, oh shit, gotta hear it. But I'm like, it's no hope. No hope. Like, you know,
whoever
like,
this is.
There's no way he's going to win. Right? That's like taking Jay-Z, Nas, 50 Cent, Fat Joe, line them all up. That was the crew. That's who he was going against. And that shit came on. Boom, 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 The bridge is over. The bridge is over. Put it up. The bridge is over. The bridge is over. Hey, hey. The bridge is over. I was like, yo, yo, Ram. It was like a niggas on a canoe in an ocean. Like, the flow he was kicking was like being on a canoe. We never heard it, Ram, ever in the history of rap music. It was like, he was like, the bridge is over. Put it up. The bridge is over. It was like being stuck like this or this. Well, we're coming down the sound with the stiffer sensei. Yeah. Down with the sound called BDP. Well, you can't sound like Shannon or the one Marley. And then Rasta Sante is only good for standing fucking. Then I was like, ah! Start running around the park. No, I'm running. It was brick. It was like a below zero day. I'm running through the whole project. Nobody can hear it, though. It's not summer. And then, yo! Like, could not believe it.
He killed it. He killed
and that was a one listen. That was a one listen. The one time I heard that, I knew the bridge is over. The bridge is over. Ba-da-ba-ba. That was it. And he always said, you know what KRS-One said, Rem?
What?
Legendary KRS-One who toppled
the whole empire.
You know what he said?
What?
They lost when they paid attention to me. They should have never even listened to me or answered. That's his bar of a lifetime, KRS-One. Yes. When you analyze his career, he said, had they never responded to me or ever listened to me, I would have no career.
That's right.
It would have just fell on deaf ears and that would have been that.
That's it. That's
why you can't listen to
you can't listen to bullshit. You gotta keep it straight.
Them boys were so big and they listened to them. You heard, Rem?
I don't listen to nobody.
I know, I'm just saying to you. They were so big and they listened to them.
Yeah.
And that motherfucker you know, threw that.
He was the they. He was a whole against, different type of they.
KRS-One now, yeah. It was on.
No.
I swear to God. He says it's time for me and him to get
a rematch.
But he doesn't want to do it. For
what?
Free. He wants to get paid.
Nah, look what he said. Listen, yo, Rem.
Yo, what? Like
yeah,
what was crazy?
30 years
was,
later?
Nah. What was crazy was, I think I was in the Fillmore Ballroom. Not the Fillmore. What's the shit? Irving Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
And KRS-One did the Bridges Over, and Marley Marl
was there.
Was his DJ or what? Something like. It just so happened that it was like a Legends night and it was Marley Marl DJing. You know, a bunch of old school rappers was performing at KRS. He had to play Bridges Over. He had to DJ that record. And Red Alert was on stage with KRS. And he felt bad to even go, yeah. Like, they were like, you know, the greatest diss record of all time, you know, and. You know, the enemy, who's not the enemy no more, who's cool, they mature, they're older,
right.
Had to spin the record. That's it was crazy. The weirdest shit I ever seen. I was standing there like, and KRS-One, when he performs it, Red Alert is like, yeah. You know, it wasn't like that. I watched him perform that 1,000 times, and KRS be like, yeah, you know, like he gets animated. He was like, yeah, like, you know, Marley Marl standing back there. He's just like, he started editing the words like, Roxanne Chate is steady. And Marley Marl, you know, he's really tough. And, you know, yo, that shit was the craziest shit I ever seen.
All right, well, thank
great
you.
Interview.
Thank you guys so much. This was great.
This guy.
There were a bunch of moments during the recording of this interview where I could hardly believe what I was hearing. From those first minutes where Joe talks about being on the Apollo stage, I knew this was going to be a one-of-a-kind conversation. Tales of 90s hip-hop are great, of course, but equally important was Remy discussing how being in prison affected her whole life. We're in a moment now where there's plenty of talk about the politics of mass incarceration, which is great, but even more important is to remember the human costs of putting someone behind bars. On a lighter note, I hope that Joe's joy in talking about the bridge wars at the end of the interview comes across. You can't see this, of course,
But that whole time, he was standing up, bouncing around the room, and gesticulating wildly. He was as excited talking about it then as he was when he first heard those songs as a teenager. I hope you had as much fun listening to this episode as we had making it. Join us next week when our guest will be Alaa B, one of the key players in the Nation of Gods and Earths, sometimes called the 5% Nation of Islam. If you've ever listened to Wu-Tang, Rakim, Big Daddy Kane, or Brand Nubian, or ever used slang like word or peace, or stood in a b-boy stance, you've felt the influence of the gods and earths, whether you've known it or not. Alaa B was there from the beginning. He had a close relationship with the founder of the 5%ers, Clarence Smith, who came to be known as Alaa, or the Father. We take a fascinating trip with Alaa B, from meeting the Father while running from the cops as a teenager, all the way to watching his nation take over the world through a new culture called hip-hop. And we'll meet Malcolm X, Russell Simmons, and many more along the way. Plus, you'll get the best explanation of why we're called the Cypher from a direct disciple of the inventor of Supreme Mathematics. Like I said at the beginning, make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to the Cypher on your podcast app of choice. If that app is iTunes, it's hugely important to give us a rating or a review. And don't forget to visit patreon.com/thecyphershow if you enjoy the program, and help us out with even a dollar a month. If you want to talk to me or Josh about the show, visit us on social media. We're at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. Let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
We all had guns.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Stupid. You know,
so. Our web guru is Aaron Young.
What are you doing looking at this stuff?
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
Who is the smartest god?
Our intern is Aziza Hassan.
8 schools when I was in junior high school just because of graffiti.
Special thanks to our top Patreon supporter, Vikram.
This is freedom of expression. This is creativity.
And a very special thanks to Don Will for his Fat Joe prison verse remix.
They lost when they paid attention to me. Listen. It says, straight out of cell 12, where hell fell on my lap. A nigga was born a rat, by drug tales and all the rats. Dishes from Chef Junior, now that's Italiana. Chicken Parmigiana, bocce with umpires honors. I told my Hazana, I die with my honor. 6 bad bitches, some marijuana, where God could confine us. If you could see the pictures and the scriptures that the bitches sent me. Hopped in the ghost, my whiz jumped in the sister Bentley. Woo, I was, yeah, that's the only rhyme I wrote in jail.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Recess calls for a pinkberry break. Pinkberry's calling.
Gross.